Welcome to Correctors. This week, a problem solver versus a problem identifier, part one. The questions discuss answers are, what is a problem solver? What is a problem identifier? And why would I want to be a problem solver rather than a problem identifier? If you're wondering how you get a better team, a team full of A players, and maybe not the directs that you were given when you first started being a manager, what you need to know is about hiring. Hiring is the most important thing you do if you want an awesome team. And we can come to your organization, tell you how to hire, when to say no, which is way more often than most people do, and get you a better team, which will get you better results in the future and make it easier for you to manage. And why would you turn that down? Come to the website, look for four organizations in the menu, and we'll tell you all about it. Identifying problems is a good thing. We just want to put that right at the front because we're then going to say that being a problem identifier is not enough and that you want to be a problem solver as well. But this isn't to deter you from identifying problems. We have to know that problems exist in order to prevent them or change them, change the outcome or resolve them. And in many places, we go as far as identifying near misses or problems that almost happened because that helps us prevent that problem actually happening in the future. But identifying the problem is only part of the action that's required if you are a professional, which we know that you are because you're listening. And early in your career, you're rewarded for identifying problems, finding issues, flagging issues, saying, hey, I just saw this and it might be a problem, and somebody else solves it. Because a lot of the time when you're early in your career, you can't solve it because you don't know what the possible solutions are. And it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking that you've been rewarded for identifying problems and you'll always be rewarded for identifying problems. And that's not true, because at some stage, people expect you to be the one who can propose a solution or several solutions and decide amongst them. So you don't want to get into this trap of always being the identifier and never solving, because you want to move on to that higher level. And in this class, we're going to tell you how to do that.
Yeah. Our outline for today is we're going to identify the problem, then ask the question, is it worth solving? Then create as many solutions as you can, choose a solution, recommend a solution, and then execute well. Sounds simple.
Yeah, exactly.
So easy.
So the first step is specifically identifying the problem. And you can't, we just said this, you can't resolve a problem that you don't know exists, obviously.
Yes, yes.
And we're definitely not telling you to stop looking for problems.
No.
But we're asking you to move beyond that and to creating and executing solutions. And even if we did tell you to stop identifying problems, you probably couldn't do it. Because human beings are pattern, we look for patterns. If the pattern is the same, we dismiss them. If there's something odd in the pattern, we look at it and that's the problem. And that's because,
just how our brains are wired.
Right, exactly. You know, if you think, if you're on the savannah and the grass is waving with the wind, then you don't worry about it. If the grass suddenly starts waving and it's not with the wind, then it could be a lion. So, you know, yeah. Our brains are hardwired to look for problems.
And every time you see the grass waving, even if it's waving in the same direction and nothing has changed, that's still a pattern,
mm-hmm.
Right? Exactly. It's a pattern of no change, right?
Yes.
And then one blade moving the other direction says, wait a minute. Our brains immediately go, no, something's up there.
Yeah. So all day long in your subconscious, your brain is still saying, there's a pattern, it's the same. There's a pattern, mm-hmm. It's the same. There's a pattern, it's the same. And so you don't hear that. You don't see it. You don't think about it because there is so much information. Your brain can't tell you about all the patterns that are the same. So it just tells you about the ones that are odd. And when you see something, a break in the pattern, that means there's a difference. But that doesn't mean necessarily there is a problem or that it's worth solving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Knowing there's that change in the waving grass, it's just an indication, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, we've got to figure out what's next or how to capture, you know, what that could be. And it doesn't even indicate that it's a problem. And even if it does indicate that it's a problem, it's certainly not enough to solve the problem, right? To solve the problem, that takes four steps. We have to identify, analyze, find a solution, and then execute on the solution. So if you're just flagging an issue, if you're just raising a concern, you're missing three steps, right? And that could be perceived, and maybe rightfully so, that you're passing the other three steps on to someone else, whether actively or passively, right?
Yeah. And early in your career, that's fine. And later it is not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's true that you won't be able to solve every problem that you come across or that, you know, pops into your head, but at least do the work of specifically identifying the problem rather than the vague raising of the flag that, hey, this thing is out of sorts, mm-hmm. or this isn't right, or I think this could be an issue, right? Be more specific. And that's what we're going to talk about next.
It reminds me of on Slack, we have a channel it's robots reporting what's going on the website. And every now and again, it says, the website's really slow or something. Most of it's in tech speak and I don't understand it. And most of the time, Alex says, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's right. fine. Yeah, it's fine. And then every now and again, he says, no, this is an issue. And that literally all the robot does in the Slack channel is say, hey, there's a change in the pattern. But it doesn't do any of the work of telling you whether or not that's a problem. Alex has to go and look at it and then look at the website and do other things that are way smarter than I can do in order to work out, is this actually a problem and do I need to do something about it? So if you want to be better than the robot that reports on Slack, this is what you need to do.
And sometimes there's even like a cool graph, but there it is. Just shows a spike. And that's it. We have no idea. What does that spike mean?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because ironically, the spike, I think, actually indicates a slowdown.
Yes, right? It looks like it's faster.
Ironic because it should be the other way around. But yeah. So just as a, hey, this is it. There's something going on, right? So for an example, you might notice that a number of credit card transactions are failing and your gut instinct tells you this is more than usual. Flagging that isn't going to help anyone, including you, solve the problem. You need to get more specific, and that's where we need to ask some questions, right? So questions we can ask using this, you know, this example, how many transactions failed previously? How many transactions are failing right now? Is the difference significant? Do the ones that are failing have anything in common? What's the impact on the company, the system, and the customer for these failures?
And if you're early in your career and you are still just flagging problems, you might recognize these kind of questions as the kind that your manager asks you, because these are the kind of questions that help us decide whether there is actually a problem and whether the problem is big enough to keep researching, big enough to keep thinking about. You know, if there's one credit card failure every 10,000 transactions, it's probably not an issue and probably a waste of time to even go investigate. And it's also possible that you can't get to a specific number, that just finding, you know, one in 10,000 is even possible. But any amount of specificity is better than none. So I noticed the other day on my local electricity company website, when there's an outage, it just shows bands. So there's like 1 to 5 houses affected, 5 to 10, you know, 10 to 20, and then it goes up. They don't say 4 houses or 44 houses. I don't know. I'm assuming that they do know with that much specificity, but it won't fit on the website. So they give you enough to know, oh, it's a tiny problem. It's just my street. They'll probably fix it. Or it's the whole of San Antonio and this is probably going to take a while. So even that level of specificity helps you understand the magnitude of the problem.
Yeah. I will tell you a specific example of how that because ours does that too, our power company. And when we had, you know, one of the babies was a newborn, we would freeze breast milk and stuff. And so one of our neighbors knew that, and they saw that this outage was affecting our area mm-hmm. and all the houses in our area. And they were like, are you going to be okay? Because like if it thaws and then spoils and then all that stuff. And that was just such a cool thing. But I was like, how did you even know? And they said, oh, well, this whole area and all that. And I thought, what an interesting way to use that information, because I would have never thought of that. But it's, you know, that information is absolutely useful for a ton of different reasons.
Right. Yeah. If you've got some medical requirement that means you have to have electricity, knowing how far away the friend whose house you're going to go to needs to be, or the hospital you need to go to, it needs to be, that's useful information.
Absolutely.
The problem with training, in-person training, is it doesn't start when you want it to start. If you want to start today, be a better manager, a better communicator, a better hiring manager tomorrow, then our video products are perfect for you, because you can start today. Each of our signature conferences are available as a video product in small chunks so that you can fit them into your day and immediately get the benefit. Go to managertools.com and look for products, and then the video products are there. We look forward to hearing from you about how they changed your life. So the next question is the problem worth solving? And this is the analysis step of the problem solving process. And the initial analysis, getting some specificity around what actually is going on and how that relates to previous data or future, you know, what normally happens. That's what helps you to do the analysis of, is this worth solving? Whilst we're encouraging you to be a problem solver, we don't want you to solve every single problem, because if the problem is small, it probably isn't worth the effort of going through the steps to correct it. Sometimes, because I type a lot of the show notes, we get emails that say, hey, you have a typo. And ironically, there is a typo in this sentence, which hopefully I'll correct. But it takes 2 seconds to correct that on the website, and it looks way better. If it took 4 people an hour to make that correction, probably wouldn't be a big deal unless the typo was so bad that it stopped.
But it changed the message.
Yeah, right. Or it made the message unable to be read.
Mm-hmm.
So this initial analysis gives you the quick and dirty decision about whether or not this problem is even worth working on.
Yeah. And so when we're trying to come up with the answer, what we need is 2 pieces of information: the value of solving the problem and the level of effort required to do so. I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with the term level of effort. Mm-hmm. It's becoming more and more popular, but problems have costs and solutions have value. But to get from one to the other costs time and effort, right? That's what we have to, you know, expend in order to get from the cost of the problem to the solution, or the value of the solution. The amount of the cost and the value versus the level of effort will sometimes mean that particular problem is not worth solving. And I think we all do this in our daily life, right? We have things that you know, happen around the house, and, you know, the blender breaking is less urgent or less important than the washing machine,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we need to use that to, and so because of that, I think we're always trying to balance, is the level of effort worth the time, or is the value of the solution worth the level of effort?
And one of the things about being a professional that I mm-hmm. have noticed is the ability to say out loud and teach other people the things that you do in your head without noticing. And you're right, we do that at home all the time. You know, I think about, is there enough laundry to make it worth putting the laundry machine on and folding it and all that? Or can I wait 3 more days because, you know, I still have clothes in the closet? Most people have the ability to do that, not everybody has the ability to describe out loud what they're actually doing in their head. And part of being a professional is being able to describe that so that other people can learn how to do it. So we're going to describe it, and then you'll probably say, yeah, that's what I do in my head all the time. And you're right, you do. So the value is based on the frequency of the problem and who or what it affects. So my laundry, whether or not I have enough clothes, only affects me because I'm the only person who lives here. When Andrew has laundry, he has three children who have to go to school and they have to represent the Spillman family. So he wants them to be clean and pressed and so on. So his urgency and value for laundry is bigger than mine. So let's give you a work example. For example, you might have a cron job that runs once an hour. And then once a week, it fails to run. And then an hour later, when it runs again, it updates all the data that would have been updated an hour earlier. And the data is only accessed by one person once a week. And the person has the knowledge necessary to know when the data isn't right. In this case, it's probably not worth doing the research as to why that job is failing, because the data isn't urgently needed, the problem fixes itself, and even if it's wrong, the person using it would know. So the level of effort of going and finding out why it's failing and then fixing that fail just isn't worth it. You've got higher value things to do that you could be doing instead.
Yeah. Wendy, I would say there's a chance, maybe even a high C, for those of you that are familiar with DISC, is listening to this and saying, but what if I don't know what that particular problem is also causing to fail?
Well, that's a good point.
I would say to those people who are thinking that, there are a lot of things that you do know that are not unknowns, that you're not chasing a ghost, that there's something right there in front of you, right? So focus on what's in front of you. I realize that that's not always easy, but yeah, there could be downstream impacts of a lot of things. And if we've focus all of our effort or a lot of our effort on contingencies on top of contingencies, that's just going to be fruitless.
Yeah. You're not getting the value, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So on the other hand, if a similar cron job runs every 5 minutes and it provides surge pricing for commodities on your website and it fails once a day and it causes the company to lose money on hundreds of transactions, that is worth investigating and solving, and it's worth throwing a lot of resources at investigating and solving. So that's the other thing of knowing the value of the problem helps you know how much resource and how quickly they should try and solve the problem.
Yeah. And that particular impact doesn't take long to figure out, right? That particular impact of, you know, losing money on hundreds of transactions. Yeah, there are lots of things that are going to bring that to the surface.
Exactly. So level of effort means how long and how many people will be involved in solving the problem. So a cron job could take one person an hour to fix, or it could take 10 people a week to fix. It depends what the cron job is running and why and what's involved and all that kind of stuff. So level of effort can be anything from one person in an hour to 100 people for 3 years.
Absolutely. And we call this an initial analysis because we don't want you to spend a lot of time here. You're going to need some data, but not a lot. You can and ought to trust yourself and use your experience to judge whether the value and level of effort are high or low. There's a difference between gut instinct and using judgment. When asked why they draw a particular conclusion, people who are acting on gut instinct say things like, I just know.
Experience, practice.
Experience, yeah, yeah. Judgment is at least based on some information, some data. For example, it took 6 hours to fix a similar problem a month ago. That's based on something, right? Or we discovered that we'd lost $1.2 million last time there was an issue with order processing. Those are important data points, right? And now that's not a lot of data. It's one data point, but it's something rather than just my gut.
Exactly. So with this much information, we can talk about value being high or low and level of effort being high or low, just based on judgment and the data that you have.
You know what that means.
It's a 2x2 matrix.
A 2x2 matrix.
Yes.
It's the best.
Yes. So there are four squares in our 2x2 matrix. So we've got four options: low value, high level of effort. In other words, the problem is small or doesn't affect many people or doesn't cost us a lot, and it's going to take a lot of work to fix it, in which case we just leave it. Low value and low level of effort. In other words, it's a small problem, it's not affecting many people, and it won't take very long to fix, in which case we postpone it because there are higher value items to work on. High value and low level of effort. So it's going to fix $1.2 million worth of things and it's going to take you 15 minutes. You just do it.
Do it.
And high value and high level of effort needs a plan. So we're going to talk about those in detail.
Yeah. So low value and high level of effort is where we just leave it. And low value, low level of effort is where we postpone. We don't work on it right now. A problem which has low value is not worth solving right now, whether it's high or low level of effort, right? I mean, this seems really intuitive.
Yes, but low value. Many of us work on little things because they're way more interesting than the big things. So, or it makes you feel good. You know, like I sorted out my filing and now it's ultra alphabetical and I can find things more quickly by 3 seconds. It feels really good to sort the filing out and then have the beautiful filing with the alphabetical labels all lined up nicely and the same color and the same font and so on. But it's really not a problem that gives you a lot of value once it's solved.
And just to go back to our tidy house example, right? If you have a mountain of dishes in the sink and 4 loads of laundry to do, and you decide to alphabetize the DVDs. First of all, who has DVDs anymore? But also, right? I mean, that's not a lot of value.
No. Best is feeding your children. Exactly.
Yes.
And when you get to do this at work, if you doubt that it's not worth solving right now, compare the value of solving that problem with anything else on your to-do list. Does it have more value than anything in the top half of your to-do list? And the answer is, we'll wager not. Yeah? Nine times out of 10, 999 times out of 1,000, it doesn't have more value. Because if it did, you would have assigned it higher value.
Exactly.
And it might be worth looking at the items with low value and low level of effort, those things that aren't going to take you very long to fix, during a lull or between projects. And if it's a brain dead task, you might want to do it on a Friday afternoon, you know, when you are brain dead.
Yep.
Alphabetizing your filing cabinet, you know, is a perfect 4 till 5 on a Friday project when you just can't do anything else because you've used yourself up.
We have a cast on that too.
We do. But it should not be taking up your prime time hours or be promoted above something else that has more value.
Yeah, it's a great point. If you're feeling fried or feel like your brain is mush, then that's a good time for those low value, low level of effort things. So the next one we're going to cover is high value, low level of effort. Now, if it's high value and it doesn't take a lot of effort, do it now. You know, that's kind of the David Allen thing, the 2-minute rule, right? If you can do it now, and, you know, he doesn't specifically say it's high value, but if it is, I mean, that's clearly a great, great indication. We should just do it now. So high value items, which don't have a corresponding high level of effort, can be worked in between other tasks. Items like writing a standard response to a question that you receive daily, or fixing a piece of code which consistently pulls on the wrong value, those don't take long. And fix something that takes you, say, 5 minutes a day, right? Well, that's 25 minutes by the end of the week, and nearly 2 hours by the end of the month. And though it looks small, the frequent repetition, the fact that you're doing it every day, the fact that you're doing it on a regular basis is what gets it its high value and therefore makes it worth solving.
Yeah, if it was more complex, then it would have had a higher level of effort. But these are those niggly things that you think, I'll do it next time, I'll do it next time. And yet, if you did them, you'd actually save way more time than it actually takes.
Yeah.
So the last one is high value and high level of effort. So anything that needs a high level of effort needs a different approach, because the solution is going to take up a lot, potentially a lot of your time or potentially other people's time or other resources in the company. And because it's going to use up other company resources, it needs to be considered against a bigger list than just your to-do list. If it's going to take the entire team, then it needs to be considered amongst the to-do list of the entire team. And for this, you need to create a plan and discuss your findings with your boss, because that's the person who, that's the next person in the chain who makes decisions about resources that are outside of you and your to-do list. Or, you know, if it's going to take a major part of your week, then your boss has to know that there's a whole bunch of stuff that maybe they're expecting you to do that is going to get dropped. And it's possible that within the bigger picture, the value isn't as high as you think, or it's not high compared with the other priorities in the organization. And that can be very annoying, because there's something that you think is important that your boss doesn't, or that just isn't important in the bigger scheme of things. You know, when you found that problem, you're like, I just want to fix it. And it's a really bad career move to try fixing something that your boss or your organization doesn't think you should be working on.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's the subtle point, I think, there also, Wendy, is level of effort can absolutely and should include communication,
yes.
Right?
So yeah, for sure.
Part of that planning is communication. So if part of what you're thinking through in terms of trying to establish level of effort is, well, I do have to communicate it to varied audiences. I've got to communicate at multiple steps. That's all part of level of effort, right? It's not just the, we think of it as, you know, the coding or the work or whatever. Communication is part of that level of effort as well.
Yeah, I'll just fix it by moving this folder. And then you discover.
And then no one.
Nobody can find it. And or you broke somebody else's workflow. Ask me how I know. Okay.
No.
So, we've talked about finding problems and analyzing them. In the next cast, we'll talk about creating solutions, finding solutions, presenting solutions, and getting through the execution of the solution. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy. Bye, everyone.